How the Lord in his anger has set the daughter of Zion under a cloud. He has cast down from heaven to earth the splendor of Israel. He has not remembered his footstool in the day of his anger. The Lord has swallowed up without mercy all the habitations of Jacob. In his wrath, he has broken down the strongholds of the daughter of Judah. He has brought down to the ground in dishonor the kingdom and its rulers. He has cut down in fierce anger all the might of Israel. He has withdrawn from them his right hand in the face of the enemy. He has burned like a flaming fire in Jacob, consuming all of them. He has bent his bow like an enemy, and his right hand set like a foe. And he has killed all who were delightful in our eyes in the tent of the daughter of Zion. He has poured out his fury like a fire. The Lord has become like an enemy. He has swallowed up Israel. He has swallowed up all its palaces. He has laid its ruins and strongholds and has multiplied in the daughter of Judah mourning and lamentation. Their heart cried to the Lord, O wall of daughter of Zion, let tears stream down like a torrent day and night. Give yourself no rest, your eyes no respite. Arise, cry out in the night, at the beginning of the night, watch out of your heart like water before the presence of the Lord. Lift your hands to him for the lives of your children. Pray for hunger at the head of every street. Look, O Lord, and see, with whom have you dealt us? Should women eat the fruit of their womb, the children of their tender care? Should priest and prophet be killed in the sanctuary of the Lord? In the dust of the streets lie the young and the old. My young women and my young men have fallen by the sword. You have killed them in the day of your anger, slaughtering without pity. You summoned as if to a festival day my terrors on every side. And on the day of the anger of the Lord, no one escaped or survived. Those whom I held and raised my enemy destroyed.
Amen. Please be seated. Isn't that fun reading?
Oh!
happy, pleasant.
Yeah.
We are in the second Sunday of Lent. Lent is our sort of preparation season before Easter. So I don't want you to think about all the rules. Got to eat this, and go here, and give up this. Some of that's fine to remember in a very teeny tiny way how much our Lord and Savior suffered. He didn't eat or drink for 40 days before he was tempted in the wilderness. So we can participate or also remember that our bodies do not rule us. We have another master besides our own desires. But we're looking through Lamentations. We probably all know about Lamentations, but it's not the book of the Bible we dip into the most. Maybe for reasons by what we just heard, but maybe we should, because it's in the Bible. It's very important. And so we're looking at different themes. Today we're going to be thinking about failure. Every chapter doesn't really have a theme, so we're sort of like, in other words, looking at different lenses about what we can be mad about and sad about. My friend Mary told me about her first semester at college, her first grade in her chemistry class. They got the results from last week's test. Right now, this is a huge class, massive classrooms at a big state school. And she was from a little tiny town, maybe like Relay. So this class was bigger than her town. Not even her school. So the professor had charted the grades, you know, put up the bell curve. And most everybody was right in the middle. There was one way off to the side that got an 11. Way beyond the middle. The professor handed out all the tests face down. She flipped it over, and sure enough, she got the 11. That's worse than my C minus minus that I told you about. She failed, circled in red. So I want you to think about your 11. We've all been there, somehow, somewhere, or you will be there again, right? So we're going to talk about failure stories today. Now, I don't know if you've watched MMA. I don't really. Okay, in women's MMA, I don't really like to see women beat up each other, really. But there was one, Ronda Rousey. Ronda Rousey was sort of the first one. She started off in judo, so she had been a fighter all her life. She actually won an Olympic medal in 2008. She was the first female member in the MMA Hall of Fame. Now she's a wrestler. She likes to fight. Back in her prime, she was unstoppable until November 14, 2015. She lost to Holly Holm. It was her first loss. She'd been destroying everyone. And a few months later, in an interview with Ellen DeGeneres, she said she thought of, when she was after the fight, at the hospital, she thought of killing herself. She said, honestly, I thought, what am I anymore if I'm not this? I was in the medical room thinking of killing myself, thinking, I'm nothing. What do I do anymore? No one gives a bleep about me without this. Later in the ESPN article, she said she thought she was weak, and she grieves the person who would have won. People called her a failure for one fight. They laughed at her. And anytime you fight, you know there's a chance you can lose. So you make yourself vulnerable by even trying. You are not invincible. If you try, you can lose. Now, Mary's 11 failure, only she and the professor knew, right? And she went and met with him, and she got tutored, and she passed the class, and she graduated with a biological engineering degree. That's a massive change, right? But Rhonda's was out there for everyone to see. And Lamentations is a book for Mary and for Rhonda and for you and for me, because we all failed, haven't we? All right, let's talk about Israel's failure. As I mentioned last week, this is in the context of 587. The Babylonians have come over and taken Jerusalem. They destroyed it. It's in ruin. There's death, destruction, famine. They've been captured. They've been scattered. And a lot of people think Jeremiah wrote Lamentations. It's probably the best guess. And Jeremiah, the book of Jeremiah, gave out warnings to God's people. Lamentations is the receipts. It's happened. The warnings were not heeded. They've come through. Lamentations is the crying voice afterwards. And it starts with a shriek. If you look at chapter 1, how lonely sits the city that was full of God's people. How like a widow she has become, she who is great among the nations. She who was a princess among the provinces has become a slave. Look at chapter 2. How the Lord in his anger has set the daughter of Zion under a cloud. He has cast down from heaven to earth at the splendor of Israel. He has not remembered his footstool in the day of his anger. How is this happening? It's a book that Jerry Sitter wrote. It's called A Grace Disguised. He talks about his journey when his wife, Linda, and his 4-year-old daughter died after a car wreck when they were hit by a drunk driver. He and his 3 other children survived. His wife and his daughter died in his arms. And he says this, I remember the realization sweeping over me that I would soon plunge into a darkness that I may never emerge from as a sane, normal, believing man. So he writes about his journey, this beautiful, terrible journey of grief that he went through. And he says, the night before she died, they were in bed, and his wife said, Jerry, I can't imagine life being any better than it is right now. It is so wonderful to me. I'm overcome by the goodness of God. He writes, legs to accidents set off a silent scream of pain inside my soul. That scream was so loud that I could hardly hear another sound, not for a long time, and I couldn't imagine that I would ever hear another sound. The scream inside the head, the shriek. How? So Lamentations articulates that scream, doesn't it? That how. The words keep coming. Anger, swallowed up, no mercy, wrath, dishonor, cut down, withdrawn. Verses 3 and 4, he has cut down in fierce anger all the might of Israel. He has withdrawn them from his right hand in the face of his enemy. He has burned like a flaming fire in Jacob, consuming all around. He has bent his bow like an enemy with his right hand set like a foe. He has killed all who are delightful in our eyes in the tent of the daughter of Zion. He has poured over his fury like fire. And it doesn't let up. It keeps going more and more. Verses 5 and 6 and 7 and 8 and 9 just pummeling you. The Lord determined to lay in ruins the wall of the daughter of Zion. He stretched out the measuring line. He did not restrain his hand from destroying. He caused rampart and wall to lament. They languished together. The author is processing, involved, not from afar, crying out to God, and leading others in grief, giving grief a form and a structure. He calls them to own it. This is us. He blames God, too. It's God's ultimate fault. Well, this is very healthy. It's not very fun to do. We aren't living in ruins, but we watch ruins, right? But because we're so disassociated, when these things come up, Rwanda, Bosnia, Africa, Ukraine, Gaza, the border crisis, the water crises, food crises, homelessness, shootings. We grieve, but we also can click, turn the channel, right? Move on. I want something happier, please. I'm tired of all this. Like, you know, during COVID, I was like, I don't want to watch anything because that's all anybody's talking about. But they can't, we can't escape it, can we really? It's in our bones. And there's pain and suffering in the Bible, and there's pain and suffering today. And faith helps us deal with it, and Lamentations does too. Here's another one. July 17th, 1981, the Kansas City Hyatt Regency walkway collapsed. Fell down into the lobby. 114 people died, 216 people were injured. And why did it collapse? At the time, it was the largest or worst structural collapse in U.S. history. And there was one little tiny thing that got changed between the design and building it. And the people that designed it and the people that built it were not communicating. And so they didn't recalculate this little tiny piece. And it couldn't bear the load. Small failure created massive consequences. God's people had failed many times, many, over and over and over and over again. They weren't catching the mistakes. They weren't communicating. They weren't correcting them. Let's look back at Deuteronomy. So God talks about this way early on, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy 28, verse 25. The Lord will cause you to be defeated before your enemies. You shall go out one way against them and flee seven ways before them. And you shall become a horror to all the kingdoms of the earth. That's to his people. And it happened, didn't it? They became a horror, a complete and utter failure because God laid waste to them. Israel's failure. Now, what about our failures, right? Okay, let's, you know, I don't have to give you the hard stuff, but I'll give you a couple of nice ones. Really, you know? Something happened really amazing, semi-amazing, December 20th, 2015, at, I'm sure you all are watching, the Miss Universe pageant. Does anyone remember something weird that happened? Steve Harvey was the host. So Steve Harvey, at the end of the whole thing, they crowned Miss Columbia as Miss Universe. They put the crown on her. They put the sash on her. Everyone goes crazy. And he comes out and says, I said the wrong name. It wasn't Miss Columbia. It was Miss Philippines. So they had to take it all off. It was a terrible fail, wasn't it? We weren't sure if it was his fail or the card's fail or they added up the things wrong. In some ways, they could have just pretended it was still Miss Columbia. Never known, never known. But that was also on national TV. That was a pageant fail, right? Michael Jackson, or Michael Jackson. Who is bad at baseball? Michael Jordan. Goodness gracious. You bring in Michael Jordan's name, that's rough. Michael Jordan didn't turn out to be a good baseball player. The Buffalo Bills aren't real good in the Super Bowl. Bill Buckner. It's fun to go on like Pinterest fails. Watch what people try to do. Home improvement project fails. Politics fails. Movies that turn out bad. Restaurants that go under. And your fails, right? Hey, I'm a pastor, you know. I have been for a long time, and most of the time, well, let's say half the time, when somebody wants to meet with you, you're going to hear something. I didn't get custody. I didn't stay clean. My spouse is leaving. My spouse is gay. I spent the night in jail. I got fired for what I looked at the internet at work. The ultrasound came in and the baby's not normal. I got suspended. I got kicked out. I failed. Julie, my kids, my friends, you, my church. I failed the poor. I failed to forgive. I failed to be generous and thankful and merciful. We all fail. Most of the time we go, keep going. Or blame someone else. We don't want to admit defeat. But Lamentations says, grieve. Grieve. 2:11. My eyes are spent with weeping. My stomach churns. My bile is poured out to the ground because of the destruction of the daughter of my people. Because infants and babies fight faint in the street. 18 and 19, their heart cried to the Lord, the wall of the daughter of Zion. Let tears stream down like a torrent day and night. Give yourself no rest, your eyes no respite. Does your stomach churn? Is bile go to the ground? Does your heart cry, tears stream? Do we care about our city, our state, our nation, our world? The destruction of our people, the destruction of our sons and daughters? Lamentations takes us deep. It's not just thinking about it, it involves our bodies and our emotions to cry out, to be angry, to tear our hair, express ourselves. With all of this failure all around us. One thing it's good to do sometimes is try to sign up for something that you know you're going to be bad at. You do that? Yeah, so you can remember we're not all good at everything. And you have this tiny little, you know, this feeling, right, of what this is all about. It's a very micro level. But yeah, most of the time we gravitate to what we are good at, don't we? Of course we do. Sometimes sign up for something you are going to really stink at. You'll be the worst person in the whole class. And remember what that feels like. It's important to be humbled that way. Okay, there's good news. In spite of all this failure, here's the good news. You know what Jesus is good at? Where he succeeds, exceptionally exceeds, loving failures. That is amazing. We don't really like failures at all. We like to laugh at them. There's a book I like called by John Maxwell. It's called Falling Forward. So it's about failure. And he says the biggest thing about failure is your response to it. Is failure avoidable? No. Is failure a moment in time? No. See, it feels like it, doesn't it? Mary's 11, I failed the test. Actually, Mary, you failed a whole bunch of times before the test came, didn't you? You didn't, at least didn't correctly assess your knowledge of the material. You could have realized you needed a tutor beforehand, and so the test revealed the problem, wasn't the problem. Failures can be setbacks. Failures are not the enemy. And when we give ourselves permission to fail, we also give ourselves permission to excel and succeed, right? Is failure irreversible? No. Is failure a stigma? No, it doesn't have to be. Is failure final? No. But if you're going to read Falling Forward, you also need to read Tim Keller's Walking with God Through Pain and Suffering. Falling Forward, Walking with God Through Pain and Suffering. And he talks about how Christianity offers this unique perspective about evil and grief and suffering and pain and failure. Because Christianity, unlike other religions, does not ignore it. It's real. It's not an illusion that eventually we're going to get out from. Sin destroys us, doesn't it? Suffering is not chance or fate or karma. It's our response is not cold indifference either, like the world. In Christianity, we are called to sit in the middle of sorrow, really, know it, own it, grieve it, weep, stomach churning, bile poured out, and taste the coming joy at the same time. They're both true. So the lamenter says in verse 19, arise, cry out in the night, the beginning of the night watches. Pour out your heart like water before the presence of the Lord. Lift your hands to him for the lives of your children who faint for hunger at the head of the street. You are owning this, and you also need to get up and look to the Lord. Someday there will be comfort. Look at verse 13. What shall I say for you? To what compare you, O daughter of Jerusalem? What can I liken to you that I may comfort you, O virgin daughter of Zion? There will be comfort. We're not there yet. But that's what we look for. We have this holy, holy, holy God. We sing about it. Just God. He punishes sin for sure. And what's the other part about him? Mercy. Forgiving. Coming near. Listening to our cries. Then and now. Think through the Bible and let's start talking about people that didn't fail in the Bible. Ain't too many. You know why? They're people like us. Okay, another interesting question is, did Jesus fail? I know we know the answer is no, but hold on. It sure looked like it, didn't it? Ridiculed, mocked, beaten, humiliated, killed, not even just killed, right? Not even just killed. strung up on a cross, nailed for everyone to see as an example of what happens to people like this, the worst you could ever imagine. I was watching Braveheart came on one time, and I got right at the end where he's like disemboweled in front of everyone and stretched out to make him an example of what you do to people like this. Jesus had that exact same thing to happen. And it wasn't supposed to be this way, was it? I mean, people had seen him control the weather, feed 5,000 plus, cast out demons. His power, his authority. So I want to go to the road to Emmaus. The road to Emmaus. Pastor Carl preached on this several sermons before I started. So these guys, they're walking back because they've been in Jerusalem and Jesus is dead. He's not. What happened? And they're walking with him, they don't realize it. So they say this. But we had hoped he was the one to redeem Israel. Yes, and beside all this, it's now the third day since these things happened. Man, we hoped he was going to be the one to redeem Israel. You know what this is? A Jesus fail. And all that stuff he told us, man, I couldn't believe how we told him. There has to be some explanation because I must have not misheard or I must have misseen. Maybe he didn't do that. Evil had won. Hopes were dashed. And then what happens, right? You think about it, you're talking to the resurrected Jesus, unbeknownst to you, about his failure. Perfect. You're like, let's leave this chapter out. Pretend like we knew you the whole time. We're just kidding. Yo, Jesus, come on. Because Jesus says this when he answers them, right? And he said to them, oh, foolish ones, true, and slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have spoken, understandably so, was it not necessary that the Christ should suffer these things and enter into his glory? If anyone wants to enter into glory, what's got to happen? Suffering. Then they see him. There's always suffering involved in glory. We talked about this in the Garden of Eden, right? If God had stopped at the Garden of Eden and they had never gotten kicked out, there would be no need for Jesus. But Jesus already existed. So he had to come. So guess what? He needed people to save. There was always the plan for suffering. For failure, for sin even. Here's a little tiny example of that. Do you know who Tyron Curtis is? His last name is Bogues. Mugsy Bogues, right? Mugsy Bogues. Grew up in the projects in Baltimore. He went to Dunbar, which is, 2 miles from our apartments. He was on that team with 4 NBA basketball players in high school all at the same time. One of the greatest high school basketball teams ever. I read a book about this as we were coming up here. And this is just a simple, if you play sports, what do you got to do? You don't just get to play games, right? You have to suffer. I don't know what they call them anymore, but 6 in the morning, when you're doing this down the gym floor, those are called suicides, right? Why are they called suicides? They stink. You're freezing cold. The only warm part of you is your chest because you're breathing so hard. You want to puke. And at Dunbar, they did it with backpacks with bricks in them. This is 1981. They didn't have all our fancy Under Armour stuff and all that, right? So they're running around with bricks on their backs. So they could go out and whoop everyone else and have fun. Suffering. Working out is suffering, isn't it? But that's what it takes to get what you want, to be strong or slim or whatever. It takes suffering to get glory. God wins through losing. He turns failure on its head. And he works with losers, doesn't he? Not winners. He does not work with winners. It's very counterintuitive to us in our meritocracy culture. He takes your F and gives you an A. See, if you get an A, you don't need him. You don't think you do. He takes your loss and he gives you his gain. He takes your strikeout and gives you his home run. And we so often pattern our lives so that we don't need to need God. It's what our drain to try to do. That's why maybe sometimes you got to do that, sign up for that crazy thing that you were bad at, to remember you need help. And one more example, and I come to this often, don't I? The prodigal son. The older brother, he's killing it. Succeeding. He's a businessman. He's a model son, right? He's not a failure. He's certainly not like younger brother. Slap. Hot mess. Embarrassment. Stealing. Besmirching our name. Killing our business. And so that younger brother, that hot mess in that pigsty, comes to his senses and he says, you know what? I'm going to go back and I'm going to be a slave. I'm going to be a servant to my dad's company. That would be better than this. And he was right. That would be true. And which do we want our kids to be? We're raising older brothers. That's what we want. But who did Jesus come to seek and save? Back to Zacchaeus. I came to seek and save
the lost.
The lost, not the found. Who needs a doctor? The sick. Who needs resurrection? The dead. Losers, deceivers, wanderers, profligates, prostitutes, tax collectors, failures. They're the ones that know the love of the Father, the embrace. The Father who runs out, gives his reputation away, gives his family back, gives restoration to a rebellious child, gives status and wealth back to one who certainly doesn't deserve it. I'm sure many of us raised our kids this way, demanding first-time obedience.
Yeah.
How'd that work? Demanding first-time obedience is a way to raise an older brother. A lot of times people become younger brothers because they were taught how to be an older brother. And they say, I'm not having it. First-time obedience is a way to not have a relationship with your parents. It's not having a relationship. It's not having it. Because there's no communication or conversation. There's no really even negotiation. Now, I understand a two-year-old, you're not in negotiating. You're in a hostage crisis at that point, right? You don't need to negotiate. But still, so I'm just trying to get you to see, it's so easy to talk about this up here and do all this stuff, but this matters. Grace matters in the way we treat each other. And then what we expect from each other. And Jesus was drawn to those who needed him. Disappointed people. Lepers. paralytics. Because Jesus is strong, we can be weak. We don't always have to be strong. Because Jesus won, we can lose. Because Jesus succeeded, we can fail. It's going to be okay. So back to Mary real quick. Mary told me, and she was telling me a story that, so this has happened, right? And now she's had a wake-up call, to say the least. She's going to tutoring. She's got way more work to do. And she said, one night, she was working on her homework, and it was a disaster. Just like it always is, a disaster. And she put down her pen, and she said, I can't do this. Seemed normal. And she said, now, I can't explain it, but I heard, audibly heard, not in my brain, I heard someone say, no, you can't. But I can. We can. Together. And she says, that right there was worth all. The struggle, the failure, to hear the voice of God. In the struggle, right? Even if she failed, she was not a failure, was she? No. Neither are we in Christ. And then